Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into The Lake Show. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake this evening. And every time I fill in, I ask Jace Frederick. Sometimes he's busy with his life and covering basketball, but not tonight. Jace Frederick covers the Minnesota Timberwolves and many other things for the Pioneer Press. What is going on, Jace? How are you?
I'm excellent, especially now talking to you because it has been too long.
It has been too long. So what do you want to talk about? Sometimes we talk about your golf game. Sometimes we talk about football. Do you have Aaron Rodgers' opinions?
Probably the same as yours. The same as yours. I'm with you. We're aligned.
Right. Just don't. There you go. That's the whole opinion. So these Timberwolves, Jace, if they just don't get destroyed by Obi Toppin randomly at the end of last night's game, we're talking about how for real they are and how dangerous they could be. And if they could just get out of play-in land, that they might be nasty in the postseason. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, I would agree. And don't get me wrong, I really don't think the play-in is like a death sentence because I don't know how much difference there is between like 6 and 7 this year. But it does put you in the danger zone of, you know, if you don't really want to play the Clippers in the 7-8 game, and they lose that game because the Clippers are a quality team, and now you end up playing Oklahoma City in the 1-8 spot, you know. And even if Minnesota can punch with Oklahoma City, it's not exactly how you want to start your postseason. I mean, it would be positioning yourself to be one and done. But, yeah, I mean, they've done a great job winning a lot of games, beating a lot of teams they should as they try to crawl out of that 7th spot, and last night was about the opposite of that.
I have a weird Anthony Edwards take that I want to run by you and see if you like it. So last night, he goes 1-for-11 shooting threes, and I think this year has been filled with ups and downs for Anthony Edwards, right? The Olympic experience was awesome for him. They come out of the gate. It's a little bit wonky. He's swearing all the time in press conferences, and he's getting fined for it and the technical foul and everything, and then now he misses every potential game-winning shot. I think that this experience for him is a good thing. Because this maybe makes me sound like I've been here too long in Minnesota where people have to talk themselves into stuff constantly, but I mean this because it's not easy and it's not supposed to be easy, or it wouldn't be so awesome to win an NBA championship. And all the greatest players of all time at this age, it wasn't easy. I mean, look what Tatum went through with people calling him a choker. And now I guess he's not, I don't know, friendly enough or something to be the face of the league. And Michael Jordan did not win right away, and there's just been a lot of players throughout. LeBron James did not win right away, who have gone through that really tough season and come back on the other side stronger for it. And I think that might be Anthony Edwards, or at least it needs to be Anthony Edwards for him to be the player that everyone says he is and will be. Is that, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree in general. I do think Ant has a lot of warts in his game still, and a lot of it doesn't stem from what he can do. It's what he chooses to do out there, and it's the decisions he makes and the shots he decides to take and those types of things. And oh, we're up by 6 and the crowd's excited. I'm going to take a 30-footer because it will be electric if it goes in, you know. And no skin off my back if it doesn't. And there's a lot of that still happening, and I think that was a big reason why they lost last night, was on a time where you could just get to the rim and either get fouled or score every possession, given this, who the Pacers had on the court, just a bunch of bad shots that he just tends to take a lot of. And I can tell you right after the game, he does not think anything he does is a bad shot.
Yeah.
But the fact that they lose and the fact that he gets some blame for it and the fact that he gets called out for it, like, we basically had Mike Conley after the game in, like, the most Mike Conley way of, like, Ant does so much for us, we've got to take some pressure off of him, in, like, a very coded way of saying, I don't know if we should have the guy with the ball in his hands at the end of games here so often. I think we should probably give it to other people because of these things. And I think it's very good for Ant. If these hero shots all went in, I just think it would ingrain in his mind of, like, what I'm doing is absolutely correct. this is great, this is how I can operate my whole career, where when it goes poorly, it the next day, the next 2 days, this is kind of how Ant operates, how he learns, is they go into a film session, they grill him, they say, this was wrong, here's why we lost, and that's when it sets in for him. So yeah, I agree. I think he does learn more through failure, far more than he does through winning. So I agree with you that I think when these things, when the end of game stuff that I don't think the process is ever very good for him, when the result isn't either, that's his best chance, I think, to learn and grow.
It's always so hard with guys this good, because I remember feeling this way with Kobe Bryant through his whole career. It would be just the worst shot. He's totally guarded. He's 19 feet away. It's a fadeaway. How is this? And it went in. Because it's Kobe Bryant, and he should be doing stuff like that. I agree, though, the end-of-game stuff, it has to be smarter. You don't need to pull up for a three when you could go to the hoop and you're Anthony Edwards and literally no one on earth can stop you. And that decision-making has to come along. It's also hard for us, because we've known him for so long, to even contextualize the age of the person and where other great players were at 23 years old. They were still working their way through these things, but we've seen him play and we've seen him get to a Western Conference final. And we get to the point of like, well, now there's expectations. Just go win the championship. What are you doing? Why would you still have to grow? You're Michael Jordan, right? But even Jordan wasn't great. I mean, okay, he was always great, but like he wasn't championship great until he was what, maybe 26, 27. So I think with Edwards, this is a huge opportunity to see what it's like for things to go horribly in the middle of a season and pull yourself out of it, to see yourself fail at end of game stuff, to learn from it, and to take this into the playoffs with new knowledge that you have built up through this year and work with it. And I think that's going to be the true test of Anthony Edwards, because Jace, this whole time, what I haven't been able to figure out is he really that Kobe Bryant type of level of player, or is he just one notch down? And that's like Tracy McGrady. That's like all time right. Hall of Famer. Great. But there is a difference between Reggie Miller and Michael Jordan. Which one do you have here? And I don't think we know yet.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. There's a lot to that. There are many nights where you're like, wow, this is one of the best five players in the NBA. And then there are other nights where we go, and too many, like not just like 2 out of 82, like 10 out of 82, where you go, I don't know, this is a top 15 player in the NBA, you know, like the inconsistency is there. And that can largely come from age and like, hey, he didn't bring it on this night or whatever. But it can also be like the decision-making just wasn't there on this night. And this team just really flummoxed him, or this defender really got into him and just took him off his game, whatever. Those are all very real things. And the thing with Ant that's interesting is, we talk about, okay, this went wrong. Can you learn from it? Can you grow from it? And just covering him for a few years now, it's like, yes, for a little bit. That really does seem to be kind of the trajectory. You know, when they crushed Denver last week, you know, people were talking about the passes to the corner he was making, and wow, look at this progression. And after the game, he's like, oh, yeah, I've been watching a Luka film. And I was just watching the game, and I was like, this feels a lot like the playoffs last year. And I looked back, and I wrote a pretty big story in the middle of that series about the progression he'd made making reads and the passes to the corner he was making. And it was like, okay, so these are the same passes. And it often just seems like it's against Denver, and it's kind of because he can pick and choose whatever he wants to do against Denver. And also in the same way of like, he will learn something. He'll do it for like five games. He'll be like, problem solved. This is fixed. This, like, he has answered this question. And then he does revert back, because there is always kind of those natural instincts, and some of them are great and some of them aren't, that he does tend to revert to. So I don't know exactly if like a metamorphosis has taken place at any point here, or if it's like, oh, we plugged that hole, now we go try to plug another hole, and oh, this one's leaking again. And again, this is all like nitpicking. Like, he's a great player, but it's just these things that would need to happen for him to truly ascend into that top five range in the NBA. I'm not sure how many of those have actually like been corrected or been leveled up to a point where you can go, yep, every night he will have this answer.
And I think with the team that they have, if Anthony Edwards does play more consistently in the way you're describing, which is, I think the most important words for him is the ball will come back to me. And right. I've heard him say it, and I've heard a lot of basketball people say it. And you just have to believe that people will pass the ball to Anthony Edwards. Like, you know, Mike Connolly, he'll find you. Jaden McDaniels, he'll find you. And that's going to be better for your offense. And I think you just see the frustration at times where it's like, oh, Okay, and he stopped doing that for a while, and he's playing hero basketball. And whether you shake that off or not is going to be the difference. How is this team's chemistry? Because early in the year, maybe that would be described as there wasn't a whole lot. And I still feel like I'm not entirely sure where DiVincenzo fits into it. At times I feel like I do, and then other times I feel like he's a bit of a, like on the outside looking in with this team. But you're around them all the time. Like, how have the pieces come together recently with this winning streak until obviously last night?
Yeah, I do think that in general, like, these guys like each other. I mean, like, if you compared the Wolves to a lot of other NBA teams, like, they just generally look to be more excited on the bench, more happier for one another than you would see in a lot of teams. Dante, like, I don't necessarily know, like, Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid are just, like, best friends. And Anthony Edwards is just beams for everybody. And Dante just doesn't have that kind of persona, I don't think, in any way. But you will also see when Dante passes to somebody and they hit a three, Dante does his own, like, three-point celebration that he does, and he'll do it because his teammate hit one. And guys feel the same way about him, and, like, guys will just rave about Dante and the player he is and the way that he's helped them win. And he definitely earns, like, the respect and the trust of everybody, not just through the three-point shots, but from all the hustle plays that he makes all around the court. So I do feel like guys have really kind of, you know, I think they knew Dante was a great player coming in, but just appreciating all the little things he's done. Exactly where Dante is at with everybody else, I mean, I think he's definitely grown to like it a lot more here. I don't know how pleased he was at the beginning of the year, but I really think that came down to a lot of the team's play. You know, like Ant and Julius were not meshing at all, like, and they were just two guys who were both doing things that were kind of hurting the offense, and I think Dante was growing frustrated, but I think Dante has recognized the improvements that have been made on that end, especially from Julius and often from Ant, sometimes not, sometimes yes, of moving the ball. And he's been like, okay, I could see how this could work. But you do see a little bit of frustration sometimes when there are regressions from individuals. But in general, I think he sees a better vision. And he always says the right thing of like, this is a process. We made this trade. We're growing. We're learning. We're playing better basketball. We're figuring these things out, you know. But I think you can kind of see in his emotions. Like, there was a play earlier in the year in the final minute, and took some tough shot, and Dante just, like, threw his arms up. It was like, what are we doing here? But I think he's seen, like, the progress, and I think he sees the potential of what it could be.
And I think this was hard for him because he had – such a great situation with the Knicks. I think he really liked it there, and those teammates were close, and the Nova connection and all that sort of stuff. And then he gets taken out of that and brought here. I just, some of the injuries and missing time, it hasn't felt to me like they have this clear cut. Here he comes. This is what it's going to be like every single time. Like, a lot of the teams figure this out in the playoffs because you're always dealing with guys in and out. But the teams that have it, where someone comes off the bench, and I know Manu Ginobili is the most obvious example, but it's also right that he would come off the bench. He knows exactly what his job is, where he's supposed to be, how he's supposed to play, how many points he's supposed to put up. And I think that they're working through that, which is leading into my last question for you, Jace Frederick, which is, where should we set the bar as we go down the stretch for the Minnesota Timberwolves and into the playoffs? Because I think when you trade away somebody as good as Karl-Anthony Towns, that it still has to be the roof. It has to be make the NBA Finals, and maybe that's tough. But that when you make a trade like that, and your whole idea, and I know money is part of it, but, well, you know, we're going to be deeper now, and we got to keep players because we got rid of Cad and Randall, and it might bring a little more grit to them or something. It's got to work. If you're going to trade somebody as good as Cad, it's got to work.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that the finals could be their goal. I think no matter what, with the moves Oklahoma City made in the offseason, if the Wolves just brought back their same team, Oklahoma City was going to be the clear favorite to win the West, even with Karl-Anthony Towns here. I don't think that would have changed. So, you know, if they got to the Western Conference Finals and lost, like, a competitive series with Oklahoma City, I think everybody could go, yeah, that's probably about where it's at, you know, and you can keep kind of chipping away at the rock. But that wouldn't feel like a regression or anything, or even just plateauing, I think, because this Oklahoma City roster looks like maybe the best in the NBA. And the Wolves have played them tough, and who knows how that series would go. But I do think if they come up short of that, if they lose to a Memphis, a Houston, you know, anybody, Golden State, whatever, Denver, certainly, like, they would be like, okay, they moved back. Why did that happen? But they have the talent to beat all these teams, I think, at their best. And just the problem for them is they just don't play at their best as frequently as they should. Maybe they've corrected that a little bit, but I still think, hey, if a team gets into them defensively, their offense isn't that great because it can turn into a little bit of stall ball, and they've just played a lot of bad defenses recently. But I still see that peak being like a team that can go to the West Finals and then play with the Thunder and see what happens from there. And if they don't do it, I think it will be because like some of their warts really showed themselves in the first couple series. If this team gets bounced round one, which could very well happen, I think a lot of these series in the West are going to be very competitive and close. If they get bounced round one, I think you could absolutely say, well, this was a disaster. And no matter how many games they end up winning, no matter what seed they are, I truly do think that because there's way too much talent on this team to be a round one loss team in my mind.
Yeah, maybe NBA Finals is aggressive just because there are a lot of good teams. But if you don't get to where you were last year, and that's the new standard that they've set, when you have Anthony Edwards, the bar is there. I know once upon a time, even making the playoffs would have been an enormous accomplishment for the Minnesota Timberwolves. So it does speak to how much better they've gotten. But I also think, hey, when you're sending out somebody like that and his team is competitive and they're a finals contender if they get Brunson back, you know, it needs to be that way here. So it should be very exciting to follow. I mean, you crushed the playoffs writing-wise last year. Jason did a great job covering it, so I hope that for you as well. And you and I will get together for some golf soon. Get that hybrid ready, my friend.
Hybrid three-wood. I've got two clubs in the bag. We're good to go. I'm ready to rock.
Jace Frederick, Pioneer Press. Thank you, sir. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Mac. Good time with you.
I mean this. Jace does only play with two clubs. I'm not even kidding. Every tee shot, if it's a par three, if it's 500 yards, he hits with his hybrid. It's wild to watch. It's a very unique style of golfing. And he will hit long fairway shots, bunker shots, out of the woods. It does not matter. He loves this one club, and you know, you should do what you love on the golf course because none of us are actually good at it. Let's take a break here. Let's swing back to the Minnesota Vikings, their offseason. And we've also got a scoreboard to get to as well. A lot going on in sports this evening. So we will have Jonathan run through what has happened tonight around the sports world, and we'll do that shortly.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Is this for Aaron Rodgers? Aaron Rodgers is the problem. That's the problem I'm having, is Aaron Rodgers. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. There seems to be some momentum. It's the best I can do. There's been a handful of reports that are saying that maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers are getting closer to signing Aaron Rodgers, of which I will throw my own personal parade on my street if Aaron Rodgers does not sign here. And that is based on, I think, what is smart and rational in football. Some of you like to make it about political stuff. Like, oh, well, you just don't like his political opinions. I cover football, so I'm only concerned about that. What I don't like is a quarterback who is 41, recently torn his Achilles, and has 13 wins in his last 34 games. And just had great pair of receivers, good running back. I don't know how well the Jets offensive line played, but he got sacked 40 times because he can't move anymore. Who brings a circus to town. You can't ignore that part of it. Whether you like Aaron Rodgers and his politics or not, you can't ignore that he is a political figure when it comes to not just being a football player, but being debated, being talked about constantly, being talked about on news networks, being talked about by politicians, with politicians, stuff like that. It is a whole different level of anything that they've had before. Kirk Cousins had that to some extent in 2021, but I think not anywhere close to the level of Aaron Rodgers. And I think what the Vikings have done over the last couple of years with Kevin O'Connell is created a place that people want to be. And it is no more evident than this offseason. Jonathan Allen comes in, great defensive tackle. We're signing here. Okay, there you go. They get Ryan Kelly, who's been a great center. These are veteran players who are looking for a coach that they can win with. These aren't guys who are just signing for the heck of it. They've made a lot of money. They're looking for a team that they're going to enjoy being a part of and that has a chance to win. So they sign with the Vikings. When they do the NFL Players Association anonymous survey, they rank Kevin O'Connell with an A+, and it's anonymous, and sometimes they do give their coaches, teams around the league, bad grades. So they're not just, you know, sucking up or whatever. I mean, the Vikings players enjoy playing for O'Connell. He's created a tremendous belief in each other, camaraderie, all those things. And you could say, well, they lost in the play. I know they lost in the playoffs, but they overachieved by a ton. And this is the second time in 3 years that they've done that. The only other time was when they lost their starting quarterback. So the 2 years that they've had their starting quarterback healthy the full season, they won 13 and 14 games. And it's end of games. You see them pull together. They communicate well. They get along with their coaching staff. All these things. And with J.J. McCarthy, my observation from last year was that, I mean, he was going to be a perfect fit for that. Now, he's not a perfect quarterback yet. He's going to need time. And I saw Chase Daniels, who's a former NFL quarterback who does a podcast with The Athletic, and he said, well, you know, last year there was no competition in training camp. Sam Darnold was way better than McCarthy. And that's not exactly true, but there's truth to that. I mean, Darnold was their QB1 last year in the offseason, but you saw from J.J. McCarthy, the progress, the growth, the leadership capabilities, the raw talent, all that stuff. And there's young quarterbacks around the league who are winning all the time. Jaden Daniels, NFC Championship game. Bo Nix, playoffs. How about C.J. Stroud last year winning a playoff game in his first year? Brock Purdy went to the Super Bowl in his second season. We treat these young quarterbacks as if they're just going to go under center and fall down and flop around because they're so young and confused. But the guy has been around the NFL for a year, and as long as he's healthy and ready to go, just jump in the pool. And he's probably more ready than you think. Or at least that's been the trend of quarterbacks who, if they're not a bust, they're usually good pretty fast, including Justin Herbert, his first season. The Chargers started somebody else, Tyrod Taylor, and then Taylor gets hurt, and Herbert comes in and is really good. He throws for 30 touchdowns, like, right away. So I just think that we've gotten to the point where young quarterbacks are ready faster. They are trained since they're 7 years old of how to play quarterback. And even if J.J. McCarthy hasn't played a lot, I would much rather see him learn on the job than I would have him watching Rodgers, who, by the way, does a lot of the wrong stuff. If you watch Rodgers play for the Jets, changing the play every time, not wanting certain things that are used all the time, like motion. I mean, it's the Aaron Rodgers show. Your team becomes the Minnesota Aaron Rodgers if you end up bringing him in here. And I would much prefer them be an entire team around their head coach who gets the most out of people and grow into the leadership of McCarthy rather than setting him back. So we'll see if that happens. It appears like it's trending toward a little more not happening than happening because of some of the buzz out of Pittsburgh that they could be signing Aaron Rodgers. So we'll see. Pittsburgh is fine for him. They'll win 8 games or 9 games and make the playoffs. And that's the other thing too, is how often have you been through this? Oh, this old quarterback, just 1 year, they got a good enough receiver, they're going to be able to, you know, okay, great. Then it's 1 year, and then you got to start all over again. Now is the time for J.J. McCarthy. Off we go into the future. That would be my suggestion. Do not fear the unknown with your young quarterback. And is Aaron Rodgers a known? He's 40 years old. It's never known what the next season is going to be. We got a lot of sports going on in the universe, and we are going to take a look at the scoreboard when we return with Jonathan. So we'll be right back. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
All right, back here on WCCO, Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. And oh my goodness, there is so much sports all happening at once. And Jonathan Lowe has spent his last 3 hours doing nothing but compiling and running the board and producing and calling guests and doing lots of other stuff, but also compiling everything that is going on in sports at the moment. So with the scoreboard, I hand it over to you, Jonathan.
Thank you very much. And I know we usually have a typical scoreboard music bed for the Lake Show and everything.
Help?
But no. I have the music that you need.
Oh, I see.
I have the music that we've compiled over years over this station, and we will get it to you right now to get you in the mood. Because if you are not in the mood, you need to get in the mood, because there's a big, important tournament. We're going to start off with that tonight. That's starting today, starting all the way through today in the Metro for the state. It is the boys basketball tournament. The state tournament is underway today, and three of the classes all getting their games, their quarterfinals underway and through by the end of tonight. Let's start with Class 4A, the games all final from earlier today. Top seed Creighton Durham Hall, they defeat Rochester John Marshall 69-57. Second seeded Wayzata defeats Moorhead 61-52. It was third seed Shakopee defeating Anoka 85-52, and fourth seeded Maple Grove over fifth seeded Apple Valley 74-51. So that sets up the semifinals on Thursday. Wayzata versus Shakopee, and then Creighton Durham Hall against Maple Grove. Let's head to 3A. Those games got underway today at Williams Arena. It was top seeded Mankato East getting the 28-1 on the season, defeating St. Paul Harding 76-33. Second seeded Totino Grace, they defeat seventh seeded Duluth Denfeld 88-72. Third seed Alexandria wins over sixth seeded Byron 82-70. And fourth seeded Orono wins over fifth seeded De La Salle 87-71. So 4A, the top four seeds advance. 3A, the top four seeds advance. It'll be Mankato East versus Orono on Thursday for the semifinal, for the berth in the final, the championship game. Totino Grace will take on Alexandria. In the Class 2A quarterfinals earlier today, it was earlier tonight, actually, it was Albany, the top seed, staying undefeated. They're 30-0 on the year. They defeat eight-seeded Pelican Rapids 80-57. Waseca over at Target Center, the two seed, they defeat Pequot Lakes, and Waseca is 31-0 on the season. They win 49-45, a close one with Pequot Lakes, but those two advance. Two games ongoing. It is third-seeded Breck taking on six-seeded Montevideo, Breck leading 42-30. Four-seeded Caledonia taking on fifth-seeded Minnehaha Academy. Caledonia leads at last check 38-22. So the winner of Caledonia Minnehaha will take on Albany on Friday, and then it will be Montevideo and Breck, the winner of that game, taking on Waseca Friday evening over at the barn. Classes, I think, will take a day off tomorrow, but really the Class A quarterfinals get underway on Thursday afternoon over at Target Center. It will be top-seeded Cherry taking on eighth-seeded Bold. That's followed by fourth-seeded Nevis against fifth-seeded Henning. Second seed Dawson Boyd will take on seventh-seed Heritage Christian Academy. And then the nightcap will be third-seeded Red Lake County Rebels against sixth-seeded Goodhue. All right, so that's going to take care of all the high schools for that. We'll keep you abreast of all the results from that as we go through the rest of the week. But we've got some other stuff to take care of, some other
fish
to fry.
You need a deep breath? I mean, that was intense.
Oh, wait. We got more.
Oh, okay. I knew you were getting to more.
We nearing halftime,
breathe,
baby.
Breathe for a second.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So let's go ahead and get you up a rank to the college level, and we'll go from there. Oh, yes, the madness is getting underway. It's getting underway, and it is glorious, and it is going to be such a great day on Thursday, such a great day on Friday. But first, we got to get through the play-in games, which are the first four, whatever you want to say. Taking place in Dayton, Ohio, the first night is underway. North Carolina and San Diego State, they are meeting right now, with North Carolina leading 18-11 over the Aztecs with about 11.5 to go in the first half of play. Earlier tonight, Alabama State gets a layup with under a second to play to beat St. Francis 70-68. The Hornets will go on to face Auburn on Thursday in the first round of the tournament. Tomorrow, it'll be the other two first four games. On the men's side, American will take on Mount St. Mary's as two 16 seeds will battle to play Duke coming up on Friday. And then Xavier and Texas will meet in the other game, the late game, tomorrow night. The first four starts tomorrow in Division I women's play. Let's head to one other note on Division I postseason play. The Minnesota Lady Gophers team will play in the WBIT, the Women's Basketball Invitational Tournament, kind of like the NIT on the men's side. That will take place Thursday as they host Toledo in the first round of that tournament. Now to Division II. The men's Division II basketball tournament, Minnesota State Moorhead made it to the regional final tonight against Washburn. It did not go well. It has just gone final. Moorhead loses 93-65, so Moorhead loses at the final 16 of the tournament. Last night, the women's Division II tournament, Southwest Minnesota State, they had a tougher test against Pittsburgh State. They gave a tougher test, but they fell 85-82, so the Mustangs are out of that tournament as well. We have no local team, no local representation in the quarterfinals of Division II. We do have some local representation from the Wisconsin side in the Division III semifinals, the women's semifinals, which will come up later this week, I believe Thursday night, for that in Salem, Virginia. Let's head to the rest of the sports world. Let's go to the NBA first. Timberwolves off tonight. They lose to Indiana last night. It was Atlanta defeating Charlotte tonight, 134-102. It was now currently going on late in the game. Boston leads Brooklyn 102-96, about 30 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Coming up at the top of the hour will be Milwaukee in San Francisco to take on Golden State. In about 45 minutes, the LA Clippers will be at home taking on the best team in the East, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Wolves will be back in action tomorrow as they do a two-game home series with the New Orleans Pelicans. Wednesday and Friday, the Pelicans will be here to play against the Wolves. First game tomorrow night at 7. The Wild are off tonight after winning last night against the LA Kings, but a big slate, nine games in action tonight. Let's start with what's going on at Madison Square Garden. 10 seconds left in the third period, and the Calgary Flames lead the New York Rangers 2-1. Finals from earlier tonight, Pittsburgh loses to the New York Islanders at home 4-2. Montreal defeats Ottawa in a Canadian battle 6-3. Some other games ongoing into the second in Dallas. Anaheim leads the Stars 3-2. It's at the second intermission in Nashville. St. Louis leads the Predators 3-1. Midway through the second period in Chicago, the Blackhawks and the Kraken tied at 2. In the late portion of the first period, Edmonton leads Utah 2-0. Another final from earlier tonight, Washington defeats the Detroit Red Wings 4-1. And coming up at the top of the hour, it's Winnipeg at Vancouver. Wild will be in action tomorrow, taking on those same Seattle Kraken that are in Chicago tonight. That face-off will be at 8:30. That's a TNT game, nationally televised, so you can get your popcorn ready for that one. Twins today, they lose in Grapefruit League action to Detroit 6-5 as the home opener is continuing to tick down and tick closer to reality. We're closing in on opening day. Now, they won't be here for opening day, which might be a good thing. They'll be in St. Louis, but yeah, we're ticking down to opening day.
Okay, you good? You good? Wow.
We got intense. Got them all out.
Okay, well done.
I'll be back on Friday night. Expect another big scoreboard on Friday night. Day two of the men's tournament.
Yeah.
Day one of the women's tournament.
What's your plan? What are you doing? You just parking? Do you have a multi-TV setup?
Well, I'll be here Friday night.
Oh, right.
Producing.
And we do
Friday
have a multi-TV setup in here.
But yeah, for Thursday and the first half of Friday, I'll be bouncing around town, going to different locations that have multiple TVs.
I see.
I can see all the games in action in glory.
Text on the Vikings from Adam in White Bear Lake asking about whether they haven't come out and said anything because of Kwesi Daphomenses' contract, the Vikings general manager. I don't know about that. He's still under contract. It's not like he doesn't have one. It's just that he hasn't signed an extension yet. And we did talk to him right after the season, and it sounded like that there was going to be negotiations going on. They have been doing a lot. I don't know if that would be a reason to be a holdup on the Rodgers decision, or what that would have to do with a whole lot. Maybe him just not coming out and talking about free agency. We will see if that happens. There are players that are going to be introduced to the media tomorrow in the next 2 days. I'll be on those calls. They're going to be virtual calls, but those, you know, we'll have a lot of stories about the new free agents coming out. But I don't know. With the Kwesi contract thing, a lot of times with the Vikings, the answer has just been, if you kind of wait, it'll sort itself out. That was like the Jefferson contract and things like that. I expect the same, considering how this team has been constructed over the last 3 seasons, or deconstructed and then reconstructed without ever having to go down to the bottom. It's been a very impressive job by the leadership of the Vikings. So it shouldn't be a terribly hard decision to keep that leadership in place. It's a little, what's going on there? But we're also in March, and there's a long time to go before the season. I think Zimmer 1 year signed his contract right before training camp. That doesn't have to happen exactly when Kevin O'Connell's does. There might be no rush for it. So we'll see. All right, we'll take a break. We'll put a bow on things when we return here on WCCO. For me, the NCAA tournament is about one basketball player, and that is Paige Beckers, Minnesota native, Hopkins. When she was in high school, my wife, who everyone here at WCCO knows, Sloan Martin, she was working for The Athletic, writing about women's basketball, covering the Lynx, and she wrote a feature story on Paige Beckers. She must have been a junior in high school, but everyone already knew how great she was going to be. And I think she didn't yet have her driver's license, and so she had to rely on friends and her dad driving her around and stuff like that. So she was just a kid. And if I'm not mistaken, did COVID take away her senior year opportunity to win a state championship? That's right. Yeah, yes. It did. Right. And so then she takes UConn to a championship, and they lose to South Carolina. Their team was nowhere close to as good, but she dominated and took them there. And she has the injury, and she's out. And then last year, earmuffs, Iowa natives, but it's a little bit of a suspicious call at the end of the game between Iowa and UConn, and Caitlin Clark makes it, Paige Beckers doesn't. Paige was coming back from the injury, and their team was kind of not all that good. They had more injuries on the team. AZ Fudd, another great player. So then this year, they got another great player in Sarah Strong. AZ Fudd back, three-point ace. Paige has been incredible this year. They have one of the top net ratings in the entire NCAA, and there's great matchups potentially. I mean, you've got Juju Watkins could be there, just big stars. But this is Paige's time. She's going to be the number one draft pick in the WNBA draft. This is her last chance to win a championship. It's been a rocky ride for her at UConn because of the injuries, but she is as good as advertised, and I cannot wait to see her in the tournament. So there is your Minnesotan connection. Thanks for letting me fill in. Great to hang out with you, Jonathan, and we'll see you sometime very soon. So thanks, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.